everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. Now, in the last few months on the show, we have been exploring the 14 summaries that you'll find in the Course in Miracles workbook for students. And we've touched upon, I think, almost all of them. And today we will look at summary number 12, what is the ego, and summary number 14, what am I? You will find what is the ego in the workbook between lessons 330 and 331, and what am I is between lesson 350 and 351. Now, the reason I'm leaving out that middle one, number 13, is because that is what is a miracle. And I think we really did that pretty well over a couple of weeks several months ago. So that's why I'm leaving that one out. But as you're listening to the show today, I invite you to join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook. One of the easiest ways to get there is to go to the 1-2radio.com website, and on the left side of the page, click the chat button. You will be automatically redirected to our private group on Facebook. If you're not already a member, just hit the join button and come on in. Now, my guest, Susan, is the author of two books based on A Course in Miracles. You'll find those books as Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness and Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want. And her website is foraysinforgiveness.com. She is a founder of the School of Reason for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado. So welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Sia. It's nice to be here.
And did I get that right? Is it foraysinforgiveness.com?
It is foraysinforgiveness.com.
Okay.
And I'm a co-founder of the School of Reason. There's a couple of other people prominently involved in that as well.
Okay, great. Thank you for being here. I'm so excited about talking about these two particular summaries.
I know. These summaries in the second part of the workbook are so evocative. And just like the rest of the course, when we go back to them after some time, you know, after really more experience with practicing this day in and day out in our classrooms, they really deepen and open up, and you connect things that you didn't see before. It's very powerful.
Yes. And, you know, when I think about these, once again, these are the kinds of things that we're always asking ourselves. And I think especially the first one, what is the ego, is particularly important to really go over if you're, of course, you know, student, because we have so many definitions for ego. You know, we've got mostly the psychological definition, but in so many ways, ego just calls up, sometimes it's positive. You know, it's like developing self-esteem. And other times it's, the ego, the bad part of the personality. And so I think that's one of the things that we have to really pay attention to, the context and what we're really trying to say. And so it's important to grasp, how does the course actually use that word?
And you're right. And with every, like many, many words that the course uses, they don't have a frame of reference in the world. So they're completely, they have a completely different meaning.
Mm-hmm.
They do in our, you know, in our 2+2=4 world. So, I think that's a good point with the, when we think of the ego in psychological, in Western psychological terms, we talk about a healthy ego. Well, from the course's perspective, that's impossible. You know, there are no healthy egos. The ego was made as, you know, is the part of our mind that was dreamed itself very unhealthy and wanted to depart from the allness, the oneness, the perfect love, and all inclusive love of our true nature. So the ego is deeply flawed, and can never really achieve happiness, although it tries desperately to do so, to substitute for what it thinks it lost. So it's a whole different definition. We're not, the course is not about, when we think of a healthy ego in terms of the world, we think of someone who has adjusted well to the human condition.
Right. Which, as you've been talking about this past week, you and I've had some conversations, and that's next to impossible to adjust well to the world. Because in fact, some of the things that you and I have been talking about is just this, you know, this yo-yo effect of the ego or the world. You get a little piece of happiness and you go, okay, I think I've figured this out, and it gets yanked away from you. But the ego never completely yanks it away from you, because it's almost as if we don't want to ever give up hope that we can find perfect happiness in this world.
Right. And we think of it as, you know, as the ego yanking it away, or something external yanking it away, completely unconscious of the fact that we're the decision-making mind, not the ego. And we're doing the yanking, you know?
So. I know.
So yes, we're playing this carrot and stick game with ourselves. And of course, that, you know, what we're learning through the course is to kind of bring that out of concealment and see that serves a very important purpose, you know, the purpose of rooting ourselves more deeply in this dream of being fugitives from God, and successful fugitives from God, and trying to, you know, get away with it, deny responsibility for it by having these external things, you know, that are constantly seem to be bombarding us from the outside. So it's something to blame it on. You know, it's not me. I'm the innocent one. I'm the face of innocence, the Course says.
Right. Well, and I've just had a number of instances, as you know, this week, in which that's it. It feels like a yo-yo to me.
Right.
I'm happy about this, and then as soon as I feel happy and feel like I figured it out, whoop, there it goes. And so it's just always that reminder. But, you know, ultimately it's, okay, can you keep your peace of mind regardless? And are you going to let your happiness be dependent on some piece of technology?
Well, you had a particular classroom this week with technology, it sounds like, but I can relate to that, because and that's so funny too, because it really does show us how it's just, you know, it's virtual. It's just made up.
That's right.
There's no real people involved in this. There's no real bodies. There's, you know, and so it's all in our mind. And but I find myself, I have a kind of brain that could do it.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to at all. Has zero interest in it. So it's fighting my, you know, it feels like fighting myself every time I do anything on the computer. And so, and what I notice is that that's an area that I'm rather blind to in my forgiveness practice. You know, I tend to, just like we are, you know, we kill spiders. We think that there's this hierarchy of illusions, and it's important for us to learn to be kind in our relationships, but it's okay to slam doors and kick things and, you know, curse at our computers, you know?
Right.
So it's, you know, this practice is really inviting us to begin to see how reactive we are to everything that we think is interfering with us getting our way with what we want, you know, with our wishes, our desires, whatever they may be. And, you know, sometimes that's in the form of a computer program giving us difficulty. And you know, sometimes that's in the form of what we would think of as a human special relationship that's not complying with our wishes. Nothing complies with our wishes.
Right.
You know, that's the whole point of this, of the ego, right? So, there really is no way out except to go above the battleground. And I love this section, What is the Ego? Because, you know, one of the first things that it says is the ego is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've been going in my class on Tuesday nights here in Denver. We've gone back and we had started over with the text about 6 months ago, and we're now like at the beginning of chapter 5. But it's unbelievable how many times Jesus tells us that the ego is insane. I mean, he also says you're insane, because when the decision maker chooses the ego, we become the ego, you know. And so it's an insane thought system. Because it's impossible. The whole setup is impossible, even though it's coherent within the setup that you know, we separated from God, and now we have this entire universe of forms to hang out in that seem very real to us, and we've forgotten that there's another reality. It still doesn't make it real.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, everything is based on you know, the idea that the whole, like, the tiny mad idea that gave, quote unquote, birth to the world is insane.
Yes. And what I love about this one is in the very first sentence after it says the ego is idolatry, because there again we go, idolatry? That can kind of stop us. But this is what I love. It says it's the sign of limited and separated self. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think right there, guys, that's what the ego is. It's defined as limited and separated, you know, and that we are settling literally for second best. We're settling for a limited self. That's what the ego really is. And the minute we accept that, then we are insane, because we're going against everything that could be ours in reality. Because we're going to go, oh, I want this little piece of what I think paradise is, and I'm just going to block out all the rest.
Right. We've given up everything for a puny something that we made up.
You know? Yes.
That's right. So, and we've put, you know, we've tried to introduce the idea of boundaries through bodies on something that is boundless, you know. And so we're always going to feel frustrated here. You know, I was listening to Ken. Has a CD set called Looking with Jesus that is just excellent. And, you know, I've had it for a while. I haven't listened to it in a while. I just started again recently, and it's just so powerful. But he talks about how, we're just, the idea of bodies is such a, it's like they don't fit us. They're so heavy. We're constantly walking around with something that will never fit the real self that we are. And after we look at this section, what is the ego, we're going to go to the section, what am I, which it talks about that true self. But you know, the rest of that sentence, the ego is idolatry, the sign of limited and separated self born in a body, doomed to suffer and to end its life in death. That's the trade we made for individuality.
And we just don't recognize it.
And it's, you know, it was a really bad bargain.
Exactly.
I mean, God wasn't bargaining, but this is what our imaginary bargain, you know, this is what we were willing, the price we were willing to pay for our experiment in individuality. And wow. You know, I mean, it's we suffer, we're doomed to suffer and end our lives in death. That is the truth of the human condition. You know, I mean, it's inherent in assuming a body.
Yes. Well, and I was re-listening to a set that I've got from the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, which, of course, is the one big advertisement that I do on this show all the time is for that bookstore, that online bookstore. And because they just have thousands of things, and I have a number of them. And in fact, I just gifted myself for Christmas. I bought some things, and I just last night I wrapped them all up. And it's funny because... Yeah. I wrapped him up and I said to CA, with all my love, Ken Wapnick. And I thought, okay, I'm making myself very special. But it was just, it was nice.
The cogs on it too.
But anyway, so on Christmas morning, I will open up my gifts from Ken Wapnick. It's pretty funny. But in another set that I've got, I was re-listening to what he talks about here. And one of the points that he makes is, and, you know, he just makes it over and over. But I think it's, once again, something that people who are really studying the Course need to understand is that that's it. This is not only a separated ego, an individual ego, but we've made it up. And therefore, God does not even know. He's not even aware of what we have done. This isn't a matter of going back to God and begging him to help us, you know, change this or to somehow get him to change his mind. And I just think that's so important, that because this is a significant departure from the way a lot of other spiritualities think, that, you know, we did make this up. We're having this dream. We are insane. But it's not as if God is up there, you know, punishing us for doing it. God, in a sense, is wholeness and everything, and is unaware that we even did it. He doesn't know about the world because he didn't make the world.
Right, exactly. And I mean, yes, it's completely different from most other teachings. And to me, that is the most comforting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, I mean, initially, that statement that God didn't make the world is, even though I didn't understand that at the beginning when I first came to the Course, it really it struck a very deep chord with me that was such a you know, deep sigh of relief, because I couldn't understand. You know, my whole life I've been trying to reconcile what the church was teaching about God and suffering and, you know, the mystery, the divine mystery of you know, the lessons that were given and all of that. And you know, it just made absolutely no sense to me that a God who was all loving could ever, you know, would ever have a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And the Course is saying, no, well, you know, of course that a God that is all loving could not be a part of an unloving thought. And that's all this is.
Right. But I think it's so important, and maybe I'm just trying to make it special. Maybe that's my way of saying, but the Course is really special. But I do think it's such a hallmark of the Course that it's something we can't forget. And it's something that I and a number of other people, when I hear us talk about the Course, it's what we keep going back to, because we've heard it for so many years. We've heard it for our entire life. And so we keep going back to that idea that ultimately God made the world. And I thought, if I could even just correct that in my consciousness,
right?
I think that would be huge,
right? And I think we may intellectually understand that what the Course is saying, that God did not, but it's, as you're saying, it's so programmed within us, and that you know, that, and it's so much a part of our impulse to deny responsibility for our peace of mind.
Right.
And to look to, you know, to celestial forces to rescue us, or to you know, accept the punishment of those forces, you know.
Yes.
Something, there's a, beyond my understanding, there's a reason why I am being tried this way, you know,
mm-hmm.
by God. And God is testing me, and all of those things that you hear. I mean, the Course doesn't have any, you know, does not condone any of that. And so, you know, what we have to look at is that every time we're trying to deny responsibility for our peace of mind, anytime we're giving anything outside us the power to take our peace away, you know, that was because we wanted it. We wanted to lose our peace.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of us that really wants to suffer to prove that we exist apart from God, that this experiment of individuality succeeded.
But it's absolutely
it's a lie, and it's a lie that's causing me, you know, great pain and great suffering. And I have a choice whether to believe it or not, which will, you know, bodies do terrible things to each other in the dream, but they cannot affect the peace in my mind. And that if that practice of denying, I mean, that really is the practice of forgiveness, is anytime we're reacting, anytime we're feeling victimized, is to stop and just say, you know, yes, I feel this. Yes, all of my sensory apparatus is telling me, is screaming that this is the cause, but it's a lie. It is
right.
Not what it seems. And the peace of God is still within me, is still within the person that I think is torturing me, you know, too. That his peace is there.
Yeah, and in fact, in the very last paragraph, I'm going to read a couple of lines from this, What is the Ego? It says, we are the holy messengers of God who speak for him, and carrying his word to everyone whom he has sent to us, we learn that it is written on our hearts.
That's beautiful.
And yeah. See, that's it. So it's written on our hearts. We can never be anything but exactly who we are, regardless of what we keep trying to make and regardless of what we keep trying to do.
Right. Where are you, Sia, in that? I've lost you there. You just read.
Oh, it's you know what? I'm sorry. That's the last paragraph of What Am I?
That's
sorry.
Sorry. That line, but it's not in this section.
No, I am so sorry. I was kind of combining my notes, you know, of things that I had highlighted that I wanted to bring forth. No, that is the very last paragraph of What Am I?
Right.
Well, I just love it.
It is beautiful. Yeah. And, you know, just to, going back to the ego part for a second, too, you know, our real reality, which What Am I is elaborates on. He says the Son of God is egoless. So our true, the capital S Son of God, our true self has no ego, you know, has
mm-hmm.
no thought of of otherness, of duality, has no consciousness of the that apart from that oneness joined as one, that undifferentiated union that is really beyond our understanding in the dream. But mm-hmm. but then he goes on in the next paragraph, though, to say to know reality is not to see the ego and its thoughts, its works, its acts, its laws, and its beliefs, its dreams, its hopes, its plans for its salvation, and the cost belief in it entails. And when he says, you know, not to see the ego, not to see it with the body's eyes, you know, it doesn't mean that we're not going to see that there are things happening in the world.
Right.
That someone's having a meltdown in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
That my body is bleeding. You know, that's not what it's talking about. It's that we have the opportunity to see with the eyes of Jesus, the vision of the part of our mind that knows this is not true and knows that all is well, that everyone is safe, you know,
mm-hmm.
and is loved and loving despite appearances. And we have that opportunity in every moment. Because before that, it says, you know, in the ego's, in it's referring to the ego, in its terrible autonomy, it sees the will of God has been destroyed. So the ego, everything the body's eyes see is made up to prove that God has been destroyed. And so the correction, the restoration for that is for us to choose a different teacher, to see with different eyes.
Well, and you know, I'm glad you brought that up because once again, that's kind of a bugaboo for me. And that is that all through the course, we really are told, and we're told in this section too, that for the ego to exist, we have to believe that we killed God, that we murdered God, that, you know, the ego can't exist if God does exist. And, you know, I think there again, from my programming and my upbringing, it's so hard for me to say, I murdered God? I mean, how did I murder God? I don't think I wanted to murder God. And that's one of the concepts, you know, I think it goes back to the laws of chaos too, but that we really have to get to that core belief because we keep covering it up. We keep covering up those things that we don't really want to see. And on an intellectual level, that's one of the ones that's hard for me to see.
Well, but it's because if we believe in it, you know, mm-hmm. and so, I mean, yes, because it brings up that guilt. That hidden guilt that's there. But we didn't, you know, the only way that we can see that we can let go of that guilt that is running our lives is to look at it and look at the root of it, which is this belief, which is not conscious, that we murdered God.
Mm-hmm.
Look at it with the kind eyes of Jesus, Holy Spirit, whatever symbol of that egoless presence you want to use. And that is also within us. And that's how we can see that it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then the guilt is gone. Then the innocence for all prevails and returns to our mind, dawns on us in the holy instant. But that's the only way, you know, if we're trying to look at the ego with the ego.
Right.
And then see, you know, look what you really did. You know, I mean, that's just going to strengthen the guilt and nervous
mm-hmm.
guilt. And the point is that it didn't happen.
Right.
No.
Well, and it's just like me, I say this all the time, but it's so true. I you know, it's like, well, I can't be projecting because if I was projecting, I'd know it. You know?
Okay, right.
And so.
Here's how you know it. We've talked about this before.
I know.
You know, we know it if we're feeling anything but kindness toward everyone and everything, including ourselves. So we're projecting a lot, you know. And so really what we're asked to do, since it is pretty much 24/7, is to look at those times that are the worst of our projection, you know, our worst reactions, the times that really trigger us, the things that the people, the things that whatever, the computer meltdown, the, you know, the person that's giving me such a hard time,
mm-hmm.
the horrible, thing that I just heard on the news, the genocide that's going on, the horrible disease that's racking, a nation.
Right.
To look at those things and to say, you know, to look at not those things, but to look at my reaction to those things, how upset I am, my racing heart, my bitter taste in my mouth over the injustice that's happening out there, and say, that is not, you know, that is not the reason I'm upset. I mean, that's our projection. We know we're projecting when we're not responsible for the genocide. We're not responsible for the person having a meltdown in front of us, but we are 100% responsible for our reactions to it. That is what we focus on. That's how we know we're projecting. If we're that we're projecting, and we can change our mind. We can take the projection back to the mind.
Well, and the very last paragraph of What is the Ego? I think I am in the right place now. It says, yet will one lily of forgiveness change the darkness into light.
Right, exactly.
And I love that too, because we all want to believe that there's all these steps we have to take. And yes, that's what it feels like to us. And I think we do take a lot of steps, but it's one act of total forgiveness changes the darkness into light. It's very possible.
In any moment, you know.
In any moment.
And again, it's not linear. We go back and forth on this seeming journey of, you know, undoing, allowing the undoing of these blocks to love's awareness. But in any given moment, we can experience healed perception. We can experience the vision of Christ. We can look at the world the way Jesus looks at it. We can be returned to completely, truly empathetic vision that knows that not one note in heaven's song was missed.
Right.
You know? And so, I mean, later in that sentence, he says, I'll just repeat the beginning again, yet will one lily of forgiveness change the darkness into light, the altar to illusions to the shrine of life, capital L, itself. And the altar is that symbol of the mind, the decision-making mind, in this case of that the altar to which we bring our dark illusions. We go back to the mind and say, I don't want this anymore. I want to see with Jesus. I want to see this differently. And that is that is when the illusions are changed to the nothingness from which they came.
Mm-hmm.
And return to the realization of our life still in progress as one with God.
Yes. It's great. You know, I'm just sitting here going, I'm so glad we had these conversations. Well, because you know what it always feels like to me, and I've told you this before, I feel like I'm going along, and even if I get really close to the gutter, like a gutter ball I'm bowling, it's sort of like you just edge it right back over to the center. You know, you just edge it right back over to the truth. And that just feels so good to me.
Well, thank you, but it's, you know, that's what he's doing here. I can't take, unfortunately, responsibility for it. I would love to, but I mean, and he said, like the next line, he says, and peace will be restored forever to the holy minds which God created as his son, his dwelling place, his joy, his love, completely his, completely one with him. And that's, you know, again, in any moment, any given moment, when I'm projecting, when I'm reacting, that's all. I don't have to worry about the, you know, am I projecting? I how am I feeling?
Right.
You know, that's all that we have to do is be mindful and try not to judge to the best of our ability. Try not to judge ourselves for it. That is, you know, we didn't know we were feeling guilty until we experienced it in this different form because we put it outside ourselves. We want to get rid of it. And so we can't heal what we don't know is there. So we can begin to look at it as a welcome, you know, thank you, welcome, because, you know, now I have an opportunity to heal my mind about this and let go of some more guilt.
Right.
And I can't, you know, when it's concealed, when we're pushing it down and you know, just slaves to the ego thought system, and which we really believe we're, you know, we have to react to things that happen to us. I mean, most people don't think that there's another way. You know, it's just what people do. You have to defend yourself, right?
Right. It's there's no choice.
And you know, Jesus is saying, no, you have a choice. I mean, that doesn't mean that you wouldn't do a normal thing once you become peaceful. And you know, once you've joined with that healed perception, you know, you may defend yourself. You may, I mean, that's okay to defend your body. Bad things happen to bodies, but you would do it without, you would do it understanding that whatever seems to be happening and whoever seems to be the culprit involved is coming from the same harrowing, you know, fearful, sinful thought system, guilty thought system that I am. I have an ego too. And, you know, fearful people deserve to be loved,
mm-hmm.
you know, deserve to be kindly treated. And so, and maybe the kindest thing I'll know, whatever it is in the moment, is to, you know, to stop their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But I can do that without strengthening the idea that we're different, that they're really guilty, that they're really sinners. I can allow, by releasing myself, I can allow their release. I mean, that's the Course's formula, you know?
Yeah, and I love that you bring that back to it, because one thing that does help me is when I remember sort of the cliche from the Course that people are either projecting love or asking for love. And so the only real, you know, response that is appropriate to either of those situations is to extend kindness and love.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And, yeah.
And, you know, in the, I'm going to go back, move to the, is there anything else in the ego section that, what is the ego section?
You know, I mean, there's a whole lot more, but I'm realizing we only have about 20 minutes left. So
we should go. Is that right? Yes, we should move on.
Yeah, so we need to move on. And maybe I shouldn't have put both these in here. But in fact, one other thing, I just want to kind of plant this in your mind, because you mentioned it. You mentioned the formula of 2 + 2 = 4 world. And I have been reading Ken's book, and I don't remember now if it's 2 + 2 = 4, if it's 2 + 2 = 5. But anyway, I've been reading that book, and I wanted to make it the topic of one of our shows, and I had wanted to do it in December, but then I realized we really hadn't moved all the way through all of these essays, and I wanted to make sure all these summaries got covered, so I kind of put that on the back table. Would you like to do that with me in January or February?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, good, because I'm almost finished with the book, and I love that concept, and I think people would really be excited about that too, so we'll plan on doing that. But do you see anything else in the ego before we go on to what am I?
Well, yeah, probably one thing that we should, one sentence that I'd like to read, just so, you know, we really know the nature of the ego here. So in its insanity, it thinks it has become a victor over God himself. And in its terrible autonomy, it sees the will of God has been destroyed. It dreams of punishment and trembles at the figures in its dreams, its enemies who seek to murder it before it can ensure its safety by attacking them.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God.
So, you know, let us not, so much for healthy egos.
Right, right.
You know, we have to see that. I mean, again, it's not to, Jesus is not trying to lay a guilt trip on us.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to see, look at your wild imaginings. Look at how the world works. Look at what's coming down here. You know, in my personal life, in the world at large, And you know, let's stop the you know, happy talk denying about this.
Right.
You know, we get really, really, really hatefully mad at each other when our needs aren't met. Everybody does that.
Well, and it's self-righteous. I have a right to be angry.
I think that my needs are the most important thing in the world. You know, I do. We all do. And mm-hmm. Is that bringing me peace? Could there possibly be another way? Because it's really, you know, at some point, this life or whatever life, you're going to reach a point, you're going to, you know, hit your head one more time against that wall of trying to find love where it isn't and say, I can't do this anymore. I have to find another way, you know, and the Course is giving us another way and in which we can feel, you know, truly loving and truly peaceful. And be able to, you know, again, unconditionally offer support to others because we are, you know, we're accepting ourselves truly for what we are. You know, that's what it's leading us to by undoing all of this other crap we've made up.
Right.
It's all based on guilt, you know, and the need, our need for affection and our need to be, you know, to have, again, to succeed and to have things go our way and, you know, our need for material goods. And it's not that we don't, you know, we have to give up the world, but the neediness of that, the dependency, the addictive quality of that is not serving us, you know?
Yes, yes. Well, and it's not. I mean, we've said that before. So often people that come to the course report, I've tried everything else.
Right.
You know, I've tried to make this world bend to my will.
let me raise my hand on that one. I including, you know, a lot of other spiritualities.
Yes.
That made you feel better for a while. But then it was just even worse, you know, because again, it was all about trying to make a better world, a better me, a better ego, you know, a more spiritual ego.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you still have that guilt going, it's not going to bring you peace. It didn't bring me peace anyway.
Well, and it didn't bring me peace either.
I mean, I think ultimately it's going to fail.
Yes.
At some point, again, in your journey, and who knows how that works, but let's go to what am I?
Yes, because, you know, and here again, what I was saying in the beginning, this is the question. I mean, isn't this the question for psychology and philosophers, you know, through the ages, is what am I?
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you emailed me this topic, I said, I've always wondered what I am. So let's do this for sure. But one thing that struck me here, aside from the fact that he really, really talks about, forgiveness beautifully. But the whole idea of looking. So I thought that these two sections were very compatible because it was really, again, about, you know, how we need to join with this presence, this ego-free presence in our mind so that we can, and I'll just read, we look on everyone as brother and perceive all things as kindly and as good. You know, that's our opportunity, is to change the way we're looking as feeling, you know, from feeling attacked and, bitter and angry,
mm-hmm.
resentful and frustrated, to really seeing again that, you know, we're all the same and we're all on the same side and we all want to go home. We're all in fear and we all have an opportunity. You know, I can still, if I choose for peace, then I'm offering peace to everyone in that choice, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that one sentence reminds me of how holistic the course is, because that one sentence wraps it all up. We look on everyone as brother and perceive all things as kindly and as good.
Yep. And we can't do that without, you know, by ourselves. I mean, that's not something, we don't even know what kindness, true kindness that isn't conditional and true goodness, because we're in a world of duality.
Right.
We need an ego-free presence beside us until we know we are that ego-free presence, which we don't.
Right.
We need to lean on this part of us that seems like it's apart from us for help.
Uh-huh. And the very last sentence in that paragraph says, we are concerned only with giving welcome to the truth.
Yes.
That's our function. You know, let the knowledge return. Let it dawn on your mind. And I love that phrase also, just letting the truth dawn on your mind.
Yeah. Because it's there, but we just forgot it. This is all about remembering what
Always.
We are, because we forgot it, but we deliberately forgot it. You know, it was we made a deliberate choice to make up this world to go play and hide out in, and then we made a deliberate choice to forget it, but we forgot the choice.
Yeah.
Because it was a deliberate choice to forget. So we have to try to remember it. And Ken often described Jesus' Holy Spirit as the memory of our true nature, of our oneness with God. That's still alive within us. You know, it was not God-proof, this ego's plan for salvation. There was
right.
this spark of what we are that followed us into the dream that's with us, you know, that's in our mind.
That's right. It's written on our hearts.
Right. It's written on our hearts, which is such a beautiful way to put it. And there's a right in between those two sentences, CA, there's one that really jumped out at me this time. And I think I'm going to have to read it in my class a few times because we all need to hear this. We do not seek a function that is past the gate of heaven. Knowledge will return when we have done our part. You know, we're always trying to, and I think sometimes as a defense to actually living this course, we're always trying to, kind of have fun analyzing and discussing the metaphysics.
Uh-huh.
And just stopping ourselves by saying, everyone's my brother.
Right.
Everyone's just glossing over the fact that, that we're having, that this really upset me to say, I just remember he was my brother. And yet we're still seething with anger,
Yes.
Our only function is forgiveness here. He tells us that everywhere. And so, again, it's not to figure out why I'm, what this projection is or why I chose this script or any of that. It's, my contribution is only to say, I don't want this anymore. It's not because of the reason I'm so upset is not because of what I think it is. It's not what it seems. And I want the peace of God. I want to see things differently with this ego-free presence. I want to return to that. And, that's not an instant, usually, shift because of our, again, unconscious resistance to this, vowed to never go back to the scene of the crime in the mind. But so we're kind of, we're going against what we think we're going to. It's forcing us to go against our fear when we do that. But we can wait out our fear. And if we're willing to do that and continue to just not justify our anger, and to ask for that loving presence, remember that loving presence is still there, then, we will return to peace.
Yes, and I think we'd probably be remiss if we don't read the very first line or a part of this paragraph of what am I? Because here again, it's just spelled out so clearly, I am God's son.
Yes.
Complete and healed and whole, shining in the reflection of his love. And then another sentence, in me is love perfected, fear impossible, and joy established without opposite. And then the very last line in the first paragraph, I am his holy sinlessness itself, for in me purity abides his own, mm-hmm. or in my purity abides his own. So it's sort of like, even if we have difficulty believing that, what am I? I am God's son, complete and whole.
Right. And again, that's not, we resonate with that when we hear it,
mm-hmm.
because it touches that chord of longing that we all carry, that deep yearning that lesson 182 talks about, I will be still an instant and go home, that we think we're so lost here and can never find our way home and would never be welcomed back by God for what we've done. And so we've now vanished to this, to this barren desert where starved and thirsty creatures come to die, the Course says. So, but that's not true, but everybody is yearning to hear what you just read, because that's the memory of what
yes.
they are. And that's what we're really looking for. And yet we don't, within this dream, this dualistic dream in which we find ourselves, which is all about sin, guilt, and fear, attack and defense, giving to get, winning and losing. I mean, it's just a constant conflict. We really don't, we want to believe that that our true self, that something like that exists, but it's almost impossible for us to do that by ourselves, because the world is a defense against that. The world screams otherwise.
Right. It's a defense against the truth.
Right. Right. So, Jesus is always telling us, and the workbook is, we're getting toward the very end of the workbook here, was all about introducing the idea of our one function here. And, the highest we can reach until we open our eyes is to make the purpose of our lives forgiveness,
Mm-hmm.
And that is just that. And forgiveness really ultimately of what never was, but the practice itself is so simple and so momentary and really just involves paying attention to our feelings and saying, I don't want this anymore. I have a choice right now, as Ken was always saying, to root myself more deeply in this dream, in this nightmare of separate interests, or to take another step toward awakening. And I can do that right now. You know, that's something I can do. I don't know how to jump into heaven. I don't know how to open, you know, disappear into the heart of God. In fact, that scares the hell out of me. But, you know, but I do know how to do this. This I can do. I can make my life a classroom. I can, and, you know, my faith grows along the way in this journey through this practice in my intention and my desire to live it. Because in each of those moments, when I shift to recognizing that you are not the problem, you know, the computer's not the problem, the child, the spouse, the boss, the world, the disease is not the problem. You know, the problem is in my mind, and ultimately there's no problem, you know, nobody's guilty here. Our innocence is, you know, still completely intact. Every kind thought we ever had, the Course at some point says, and I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, the Holy Spirit is holding for us. There, you know, we will go home. You know, despite the ego's raucous shrieks that we're never going to get this course, it's way too hard, you know, that's a lie.
That's right. And, you know, I'm just feeling compelled here to put a plug in to everybody listening to this, no matter when you're listening. You know, maybe you're listening live on Fridays at 8 a.m. Pacific, or maybe you're listening to the archives. But if you've never done the workbook lessons, you know, really think about making that a commitment in 2015, because people all over the world will start doing the workbook, starting with lesson one on January 1st. And you don't have to do that. Like, you could start anytime you want. But it's kind of nice to me. It always feels comforting to know that literally there are thousands, maybe millions of people all over the world who are starting to do those workbook lessons. So if you've never done them, they're just an incredible journey to do that. And of course, here on the show, we will be, you know, kind of reminding you of those workbook lessons. We'll take them, you know, some of the particularly really wonderful ones that we love, Susan and I love, and we'll work through some of those. So I would really encourage you to consider making that a commitment in 2015. And Susan, I can't believe it, but we're really at the end of our show.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And like I said, maybe we shouldn't have tried to tackle two of these, but these are great. And actually, even this last one, I think we could tackle a little bit more in January. But I want to give you the opportunity to make any announcements that you'd like to make before we close the show today.
Okay, sure. And well, let's see. I will be offering a... coming up in 2015, a workshop on parents and the parent-child relationship, transcending guilt, blame, and need in that relationship. I'm going to be doing that in Portland at the end of March, and here in Denver, February 21st, I think it is. So if you're interested in that, you can go to my website and, you know, shoot me an email. and then I'm also preparing... I will have a new book, a collection of essays, of selected and edited essays about, you know, this practice of really trying to make our lives about a classroom and learning to hopefully smile a little bit along the way, out in probably the spring.
Yay, because I love your other two books, so I would really look forward to that one.
And that's called Forgiveness, the Key to Happiness. So that will be coming. And can I just read the last few sentences of this? Because I think it's such a it's a beautiful Christmas sort of imagery here, too, and might be a nice thing for us to close with.
To end the show. And you're talking about the last couple of lines in the last paragraph of What Am I? Correct?
Okay,
let's hear them.
Okay, and let's see. Well, I might have to... So back up just... for context.
Uh-huh.
So the paragraph begins, and it will repeat that lovely one sentence of yours, but it has more to say. We are the holy messengers of God who speak for him and carrying his word to everyone whom he has sent to us. We learn that it is written in our hearts, and thus our minds are changed about the aim for which we came, the purpose for which we came, and which we seek to serve. We bring glad tidings to the Son of God who thought he suffered. Now he is redeemed. And as he sees the gate of heaven stand open before him, he will enter in and disappear into the heart of God.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you just have to love that. We bring glad tidings to the Son of God through our lives by exemplifying what this course teaches in forgiveness.
Exactly. And we disappear into the heart of God. You know, it's like the end of the obstacles to peace, beyond the, we disappear, the lifting of the veil where it says we go beyond the veil, not to be seen, but no, you know, not to be lost, but found, not to be seen, but known. It's really what we're all so deeply longing for, I think. So okay. That, and then one more announcement that I forgot, which is important, and that is just the Foundation for A Course in Miracles is going to begin streaming its classes in January. And so, you know, you will have an opportunity to virtually experience these classes. You know, everything that's being offered at the Academy is going to be starting to be streamed. So if you go to the Foundation for A Course in Miracles website and look under announcements, there are some links there to get more information and set yourself up. And boy, I think that is something that everybody ought to just race to do.
Oh, absolutely. And I didn't know that. So thank you for letting us know that.
Yeah, it's really exciting. They've been trying to do this for a long time, I understand. So the teachers there, as I've said before, the three people, Laurel and Jeff and Rosemary, who teach, are just awesome and, you know, are just doing a beautiful job of continuing Ken's, you know, just mind healing work. And so, and you know, they're funny and they're great teachers. So yeah, check it out.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And absolutely check out the foundation anyway, because they do have literally hundreds of books and thousands of hours of recordings of different classes and workshops and lectures and talks that are just, they're just priceless. And that you can find those in the online bookstore at www.faicm.com. Or no, it's .org, isn't it? It's FA, yeah. So the Foundation for A Course in Miracles.org. So check that out. And everybody, thank you so much for being here today. Thanks for making A Course in Miracles part of your day. Thanks to the listeners and everybody in the chat room. And thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver. And you can find me, C.A. Brooks, for readings, personal consultations, mentoring, and coaching on 12listen.com. And remember, too, that if you want to read the lesson of the day based on, there again, starting in January 1st, we take those lessons day by day, but they are available as recordings on 12radio.com in the archives. So you can go anytime and just hear the lesson being read, or you can actually find it on 12listen.com. Also, you can read it. You can see what the lesson of the day is. So there again, I find that helpful and I kind of tune into that now and then. So just remember that that's always available to you. So I hope you'll stick around today on Fabulous Fridays on 12radio. You've got about 5 minutes to get yourself another cup of coffee or tea or to get a snack. And be back in time for the Through Line with Christine Dumouriez. Until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 12radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.